It's a Monday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll talk about where the Heat stand in the playoff picture during the final week of the season.
And we'll open up the mailbag to talk about Josh Richardson's chances of making the all-defensive team and more. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back, and I write for Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Rommel, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRommel13.
With two games left in the season, the Heat are in the sixth seed. Record-wise, they are tied with the Bucks and have a game lead on the number 8 Washington Wizards. They own the tiebreaker with both teams. They're four games back of the number 5 seed, so the Heat are locked into 6 through 8. So it's either the 6th, the 7th, or the 8th seed for the Heat. With the 76ers' win over the Cavaliers over the weekend, Philadelphia is in the 3 spot with a half-game lead over the Cavaliers. The Heat would play the 76ers if the playoffs started today, but that could still change by the end of the week. So, David, this is a mailbag podcast. It's Mailbag Monday. That's what we do here. But I've got a question for you. Would you rather play the Sixers or the Cavaliers in the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs?
That is a really tough question to answer because I think you can look at both teams and say that they both have really great strengths and also great weaknesses, both of which Miami could exploit, I think. When it comes to the Cavaliers, as far as their weaknesses are concerned, they're still trying to integrate new pieces, after their post-trade deadline rebuild, where they had, Larry Nance Jr. and Clarkson and everybody else, Rodney Hood. So all these new players that are trying to get used to playing alongside LeBron James. So they also have their defensive issues, which have been well chronicled. It's not as complete a team as it's been in years past, but LeBron James has yet to lose a playoff series in the first round. That would not be a desirable matchup for Miami because, again, if you look at the old adage, and I'm not sure how true this is, but whatever team has the best player in a series has the better chance of winning. LeBron James is, not even arguably, he is definitely the better player between anybody on both rosters, And Kevin Love could be the second best player, and he's a very dangerous weapon, although he's not a great defender. He's a very good three-point shooter and a guy who can really change a series in their favor. So that's a real troublesome.
He could be if experience is a factor. And I think it is in the playoffs. But, man, I don't know if it's recency bias, but the way the Sixers just beat down Cleveland. I know it's not the playoff Cavaliers and they've got to flip to, switch to flip, et cetera, if we believe in that. And I think Philadelphia's got three of the best four players in that series.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
I would say Ben Simmons,
Joel Embiid, if he's back,
and Robert Covington.
Ooh, is Covington that much better than anybody who was on the Heat roster? You think Covington's better
I was going to say versus Cleveland. That's what I'm sorry. I was comparing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay.
And I think Covington right now is a better. He's more valuable with his skill set than I think Kevin Love is. And that's not anything against Kevin Love. I just think the Cavs don't use Kevin Love right. He basically just stands in the corner and shoots threes. And I think Robert Covington, the way the Sixers use him, is just a better player this year than Kevin Love is. And then against the Heat, look, obviously the Cavaliers would probably have the two best players in the series, even with between LeBron and Kevin Love. I'd probably say those are two better players than the Heat have. But the Heat are so deep. They've probably got the next best 8 players in the series. I don't even think that's an exaggeration.
To answer your question, then, I mean, look, it's really difficult to answer. I don't know that there's any right answer. Me personally, I tend to feel like Philadelphia is easier to beat. Like, aside from J.J. Redick and Amir Johnson, I don't think anybody on that roster who plays a significant part, Marco Bellinelli as well, they don't have real experience as far as the playoffs are concerned. I don't know if that's going to force them to kind of crumble. I don't know if Ben Simmons can live up to the hype in the playoff series. I don't know if Joel Embiid can. I don't want to bet against them. I'm curious to see if a more engaged Hassan Whiteside tilts things in Miami's favor.
Right.
I kind of tend to gravitate towards Philadelphia being the quote-unquote easier opponent here. So if I had to answer, I'd say I would rather play the Sixers. but I don't know, to be honest with you. I mean,
look, I think
Cleveland has LeBron James, but yeah, go ahead.
No, you're right. Cleveland has LeBron James, and LeBron James is not going to, after making it to the finals for seven straight seasons, he is not going to lose in the first round of the playoffs. He's just not. We know that that's not going to happen. I don't care who he's playing. Right. And so if that's basically the case here, then yeah, I think you'd rather play Philadelphia. Also, considering Miami beat the 76ers the last two times they played them, they match up pretty well there. There is an experience factor that leans heavily into Miami's favor. So yeah, I'm with you. I'd rather play the 76ers. But Miami's not going to be favored in either series. It's going to be tough. And right now, it just doesn't look like the Heat. You know, there is still a possibility that Milwaukee is able to vault them and Miami ends up with the seventh seed and they play the Boston Celtics in the first round, which I still think of the three teams here, Boston, Philadelphia, and Cleveland, the better matchup would be Boston for Miami. But mm-hmm. it just doesn't look like the Heat are going, even with, you know, that loss to the Knicks, aside, it does not look like they're going to fall into that seventh seed or do it at least on purpose. And in a vacuum, I still think Miami's a better team than both Washington and Milwaukee at this point. So with that being said, it looks like the Heat have a pretty good chance of being the sixth seed. And if that's the case, it's going to be more about the jostling between Cleveland and Philadelphia there for the three spot that determines where they fall in the first round as more so than what happens at 6, 7, and 8. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know what? I don't know if Miami can win out over the next two games. I mean, I could see them dropping the last three games of the season, to be honest with you. I mean, although Toronto probably – yeah.
Toronto's going to rest their guys, right?
Probably. Yeah, I mean, they're not going to be playing for anything. So that's interesting. I mean, I don't know that Miami will be playing for anything either, so they might be resting their players. So
maybe they'll just say – well, I don't know. Toronto could rest because Toronto's locked into the one seed. That's done. Toronto and Cleveland.
Sure.
Toronto and Boston, I'm sorry, are locked into 1 and 2. So they can – both teams could just rest their players for the rest of the season. It's not going to affect where they end up. I don't see Miami doing that, but I could see them losing against the Thunder just because the Thunder are good and they start playing for a lot. The Thunder are still playing for more than what Miami's playing for.
They're playing for a playoff spot. I mean, yeah. they could be virtually out if they lose out in the next couple of games.
It's going to be a fun last week of the season outside of Miami too. I mean, I'm looking forward to this. We'll tell you why Josh Richardson deserves to be on the All-NBA defensive team after this quick break. Hey, everyone. I hope you're subscribed to Locked On NBA. Yes, yes, yes. This is Locked On Heat, and we appreciate you subscribing and listening to this as always, but you're going to want to add Locked On NBA to your daily podcast playlist. Why? Because it's the only daily NBA podcast that's less than 30 minutes long and delivers the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day. It's bite-sized, it's consumable, it's ready to go every day for you. And make sure to listen on Tuesdays because that's when David and I are hosting. To get the latest episode every day, subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app. We'll talk about how Justice Winslow compares to some of the other players in his draft later on, but let's get to this question from Jeff. Jeff asks, Josh Richardson is top 10 in the league in steals and second in blocks for players less than 6'7". His defense has slipped just a bit after the break to my eye. What all defensive team would you put him on as a guard if there were enough spots? So, David, I know we've talked about this a little bit here and there, but this is the last week of the season. People are starting to put their votes together. I wonder, I think Josh Richardson's got a really good chance at making one of the two NBA all defensive teams.
Well, you want to put them together? Who do you have on your all defensive teams, first of all? I mean, just from the guard position, I guess.
So let me pull it up here. But I know I've got Dejounte Murray as my starting point guard, my first team all defensive team point guard.
And he's played enough at this point to warrant a selection.
Yeah. And he's been easily the best defensive point guard in the league. And it's a big reason why San Antonio has been good this year is because they've been able to hold their opposing point guards to below average shooting rates and points per games. So I just pulled it up. I've got Dejounte Murray at guard. I've got Josh Richardson on my first team.
Ooh.
I've got Robert Covington as a forward, Al Horford as a forward, and Rudy Gobert as my center. Even though I might end up – no, I'm probably going to stick with Gobert there. I'm not worried about games played for all defense. I'm more worried about that for Defensive Player of the Year. But I would listen to Jrue Holiday as the other guard spot over Josh Richardson. But if you're looking at four guard spots for, and Josh Richardson, if he gets in, he's going to be voted in as a guard, even though he's logged most of his minutes at small forward. He's still viewed as a guard. So I think if he gets in, he'll be there. And forward is so deep this year that if people want him in, he's going to get in at guard. I've got five guys I'm considering for my guard spots. It's Murray, who's a lock, Richardson, who may or may not be a lock, Drew Holiday, who is a lock to me, Ben Simmons, and Marcus Smart. And Marcus Smart, I have falling off only because he hasn't played basically for the last month of the season. So
the Simmons selection is a difficult one, right? Because I mean, he plays a lot of guard offensively, though.
Yeah, I had trouble with that because he doesn't guard point guards. So, but he's been such a good defender this year that like my second team right now is Ben Simmons, Drew Holiday, Giannis, Anthony Davis, and Joel Embiid. I mean, that's crazy. My first team is Dejounte Murray, Josh Richardson, Robert Covington, Al Horford, Rudy Gobert. And look, I went to the Pelicans Warriors game Saturday night, and I was watching that game. And Kevin Durant has to be on my all defensive team. He is that good defensively, so I got to put him in somehow. I don't know how he's going to get on there.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of challenges there. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else who might be included in that selection. Now, Wall hasn't played enough. He probably would have earned that selection in the past.
As far as guards go?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, Chris Paul, you could put on there. Right. He's going to get votes, but I just, again, games played is a factor there a little bit. I do think that these other guys have been a little bit better. I would be okay taking Ben Simmons off and putting Chris Paul there since he actually does guard other point guards. Right. He's been really good. Jimmy Butler hasn't been good enough or played enough to me on defense. Victor Oladipo, I think he gets a lot of steals, and that's going to get him probably some votes. I don't know if that's going to get him on all defense. Kyle Lowry always gets votes, even though I think his defense has slipped a little bit this year.
It has.
Mike Conley always gets votes, but he's injured, so that's one of those spots that sort of opens up. Yeah, those are my guys. Donovan Mitchell, to be honest, has a case to be on there too.
Yeah, I think we're forgetting somebody who has a legitimate case, and that's Victor Oladipo.
That's who I said, Victor Oladipo. He's got a lot of steals. Sorry. He's got a lot of steals this year. He probably should be on. He's been really good on defense, but he's been more of like a disruptor. I don't know if he's been as good as just like a one-on-one, you know, body up, stop you from getting to the rim defender. I think that his defense is a little exaggerated just because of how much he's actually just getting steals. Like he leads the league in steals, and that matters. But I feel like guys like Murray and Richardson are guys just that'll body you up and not let you get by them.
Yeah, I agree.
But Oladipo's got a case, and Drew Holiday too. So I would actually, at this point, you may probably Murray, Richardson, Oladipo, and Holiday are my four guards that I want on.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, Miami hasn't campaigned all too actively. We've heard some rumblings and everything else, but I wonder if he's a big enough name at this point where other coaches and people who will be voting for this consider Richardson that much of a threat. It's interesting. It was a good piece by Jared Dubin over at the Step Back, making a strong case about Richardson's impact, not just defensively, but offensively as well. So definitely go check that out whenever you have an opportunity.
One thing that's not in Richardson's favor, other than obviously not being a big name, is that his advanced metrics don't really pop off. He's got less than one in defensive real plus minus on ESPN's statistics page. And then his on-off numbers are good, but they're not going to blow you out of the water. The Heat have a defensive rating of 104.5 when Richardson is on the court and 103.6 when he's on the court. So it's not that great. Actually, Justice Winslow's defensive rating and defensive metrics are higher than that of than Josh Richardson there. So Winslow's might have a case to make the all-defensive team too, but the question was about Richardson. I think he should be on it. I think he's just a good overall defender. So we'll go to our next mailbag question, which has to do with Hassan Whiteside and if there is a positive to playing him more minutes. We're going to answer that after this. It's easier than ever to listen to Locked On Heat. You don't even have to use your hands. Now you can stream the show on your smart speaker, such as Amazon Echo or Google Home. It's easy. Here, I'll show you. Alexa, play the Locked On Heat podcast.
Getting the latest episode of Locked On Heat. Here it is from TuneIn.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Now it's that much easier to stay up to date on the latest episodes of Locked On Heat, the only daily Miami Heat podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app. Okay, Culture 305 writes in, are you impressed with Justice Winslow's development? Later picks like Devin Booker, Miles Turner, and Kelly Oubre all look better than him.
Well, that's pretty debatable, to be honest with you. I mean, look, you can make a strong case for all of those. Devin Booker has gotten a lot of attention, I think, from the casual fan for being such a gifted scorer, having a 70-point game, et cetera. But I think you look at maybe some other, maybe more analytically-based pundits, and they'll kind of question what Booker's overall impact might be. You know, he's a very good scorer, but he doesn't do, you know, anything else particularly well. He's not a good rebounder. He's not a good playmaker. He's not a good defender. So there are questions there. As far as Miles Turner, his consistency is kind of questionable. He has some big games, and he certainly provides some scoring punch from the perimeter. But at the same time, he's, you know, easily bullied defensively. He's not a guy who's going to protect the rim. Not like Hassan Whiteside or any other established rim protector. So, you know, it's a questionable fit for Turner. And Oubre, as much as you and I both appreciate Kelly Oubre, the player and the person, there are holes in his game. And he has been shooting really, really badly since the All-Star break. I mean, he had a very good month there. He was one of, you know, Washington's best shooters from three-point range. And that shooting has tapered considerably over the last couple months. He's still a really good defender. But at the same time, I don't know that he's considered – you know, on the right track developmentally. And I look at Winslow's progress this year as an all-around player, as a really good potential, you know, obviously a very good defender. And offensively, he's turned into quite a season. To be honest with you, I think Winslow might be ahead of guys like Oubre and Turner, and maybe just a shade behind a guy like Booker, who can learn defense eventually if he wasn't playing for a really bad Phoenix team.
Yeah, you know, I just look at what's valuable in today's game, and scoring is just more valuable than basically anything else in today's NBA. So I do give a little bit of a lead to Devin Booker in that regard,
sure.
Just because he's able to anchor your offense, essentially. But Justice Winslow checks off all the other boxes. I mean, he is versatile as a defender. He rebounds at a high level. He's a good passer. He's a better facilitator than Devin Booker is at this point. There's a lot about Justice Winslow's game that I like better than Booker. I would actually, if you gave me, for example, the Warriors, who would be a better player for the Warriors right now? I'd put Justice Winslow on the Warriors. I think he contributes more to winning right now than Devin Booker does, just because of the things that he brings to the game, all those in-between things and those winning plays that Eric Spoelstra likes to talk about. Look, I understand that there is a tendency to judge a player who is picked versus the guys who are picked after him and compare that way. And I think there are a lot of people like Culture_305 who look at guys like Turner and the number and the fact that he's a three-point shooting center, and Booker and the numbers he's putting up, and Oubre and all the attention he's gotten this season, and wonder if Winslow is the better pick there. The better way, and you know, you read what scouts are writing and you talk to people, and the best way to really judge how successful a pick was not to judge them based on the guys who went after him necessarily, but the players who were selected in the same slot in drafts prior. You know, who else was taken at 10? Because chances are, with all the players that are getting picked after one player, there are going to be guys who end up just being better than the guy you take. I mean, that's just, if you're not picking in the top three, those are just the odds. So that's almost a foregone conclusion that you're not going to get the best player at 10 between guys taken of 10 and later. But compare that to the guys, the last four guys who were picking who were chosen at 10 before that 2014 draft and Winslow was taken, or 2015 draft, CJ McCollum, Austin Rivers, Jimmer Fredette, and Paul George. So you think like basically two not good players in Jimmer and Austin Rivers. Austin Rivers was fine, but he's not great. And then two all-star players in McCollum and Paul George. Winslow's right in the middle. That's a fine pick. He is an above average player at that pick. So look, I still think it was a successful pick. I do think that Justice Winslow's best basketball is ahead of him still. I've been impressed with his development. And to answer that question, I have. And I think, again, he is going to be, in the long run, probably better than, I would say, I still think all of these guys, I still think he'll be better than Devin Booker in the long run, more valuable than Devin Booker in the long run to a winning team.
That's a good point. And I think that's all about how we ascribe value to a player. You know, if we're looking for a high volume scorer or somebody that can change the game offensively, Winslow may never be that player, but he can do so much and provide such versatility that he absolutely contributes as a high-level role player, and I think that's essential for winning basketball. I mean, you look at any team, they need a guy like that. Whether he turns into – he's not going to be a scorer like Devin Booker, but he could be a Shane Battier type, and obviously we know in Miami how important he was to their championship seasons.
I mean, who was more valuable in their career in the long run, Shane Battier or Jamal Crawford?
Right.
You know, yeah, and thank you. I missed one player there. Elfrid Payton was also selected at 10 the year before Justice Winslow was drafted. So Winslow doing pretty good for other number 10 selections. Our next question comes from Julie, who writes in, does it make sense to play Hassan Whiteside more to get his trade value up? Obviously, this on the heels of Whiteside being played less and that debate over whether or not he should be playing more or less minutes. If you ask Whiteside, obviously he should be playing more minutes. But this is an interesting way to look at it. Does it make sense to play Hassan Whiteside more to get his trade value up? Because if the Heat ultimately do want to move on from him because they don't like his attitude, get that trade value up. It'll be a lot easier. I think, David, without even asking you beforehand, I do think I know where we both stand on this. But so I'll clear out and I'll let you answer here.
I'm going to have to go with no on that. I don't know if that's what you were thinking that I would answer. Okay. Yep. But it just, one, I think if he plays too many minutes, there's a very good chance that he'll start to get tired, that he won't play as efficiently or as effectively, that other teams then will start to see the worst version of him that's tired, lackadaisical, not giving maximum effort, et cetera. And then that will impact his overall value negatively if you're trying to move him. Conversely, if you hold him out and say just play him for 20 to 25 really strong minutes of play, and a lot of that depends on him, obviously. But if you play him for those smaller amounts, then it's always the mystery box. You never know. You know, some other team could look at him and say, huh, they're wasting his talent there. We could play him 35 minutes and really have a superstar in our hands. Little do they know, of course, that there's a very slim chance of that happening. So to me, I think you decrease his value if you play him more minutes because you're not going to get the more effective version of Whiteside.
Yeah, a bigger bang in less time. And then right. Exactly that's such a good point that you make. If he's putting up, 20 points or putting up like 18 points in 25 minutes, like he's putting 18 and 13 up in right. 25 minutes, the Kings could look at him and be like, oh, he's doing that in 25 minutes. He could be a 20-point, 20-rebound guy for us if we play him 36 minutes a game. And that's exactly right. I figured you were going to say all of that, and that's why I threw it to you. Because you and I tend to agree a lot when it comes to Hassan Whiteside. Well, that's all we have for today. Thank you for sending those mailbag questions in. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of the Heat's game versus the Thunder. You could send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.